You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy weekend, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name's Tony East, and I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News, and today is finally happening. We're finishing the player season recaps from last season with only a mere 5 days until the draft and the next season officially starts, so it's about damn time with Edmund Sumner, one of my favorite guys to watch on the team and favorite guys to project the future of. If you're here for Oladipo stuff, I will do a minute of that right now. Yesterday's whole show was dedicated to that saga and where it's at. There's been a small update since that show. Oladipo, in a statement to The Athletic, said, "I know there have been people saying I have asked players to trade for me. That is just not true, period. I love my teammates. I cherish the state of Indiana, and I am focused on leading this franchise to a title." Shams Charania with that report saying, Victor Oladipo informed the Pacers he's committed to the franchise and team direction entering the season. That, to me, screams the same thing we've been saying. They're going to keep him into the season and probably look for a trade closer to the deadline when his value is better, or at least they'll hope that it's better. His value is super low right now, so I don't really know what to make of the statement. It wasn't via the Pacers. It wasn't him saying it. It was via another outlet and someone else saying it. So it kind of like, yay, you did what you're supposed to do, but also still kind of not enough, you know, and not enough commitment from him to the team, you know, not enough from him to give the vote of confidence that he really is buying into this team. Anyway, we're not here for that. I don't care about that. I want to talk about Edmund Sumner because he has shown nothing but growth and fun and commitment to the Pacers, where his only career team and his three-year career. So how I've been doing this is different from Adam, of course. We've been doing our player season recap separately. I kind of like his big questions about players. I'm going to steal that next year. But what I do is I look at some stats, and I look at some, in the first segment, look at some key stats that define a player and how their careers or their season went, and then some skills that they showed or didn't show. And how important they are. And then I look at their future in the third segment. And Sumner has interesting stuff to talk about for all of those to me. So for those unaware, or if this is your first time ever hearing me talk, I'm his biggest fan. I think Edmund Sumner is really good, like now. Like not, like maybe just shy of starter level. I'm saying really good is extreme. But I think he deserves way more playing time than he gets now. He's probably, I would probably play him over Jeremy Lamb personally, for example. And I think he deserves to play a lot. Anyway, so this past season he played 31 games. He missed a ton of time due to injury, and this kind of got buried in the morass of, you know, at the beginning of the season, the T.J. McConnell, Aaron Holiday debate over who should be backup point guard kind of dominated the story about the Pacers rotation. But if you'll recall, before Sumner got hurt in the third game, he broke his hand against the Pistons, he was the backup shooting guard, right? He played 21 minutes opening night, 16 minutes their second game, and 28 their third game, and he played pretty well in those minutes. He was who they thought was the backup at that time. They said, we need to get your rotation minutes, get you out there, get you playing. And then he got hurt. He missed so much time. He missed from the last game of October through roughly mid-December. He only played, he played in two games between then and December 20th, right? So his season was really derailed by that injury because he was in the rotation. They obviously have some belief in him too if they had him in the rotation to start the year. So the first key stat is 31 games. That needs to be upped, right? In his first season, he was on a two-way. He only played in literally the last game of the season. And then his second season in a two-way, he got in 23 games. They kind of saw, oh, okay, this guy's good in that year. Leveraged that into his new deal. He only got 31 this game, right? So he played 24 his first year. He's only 31 this year. That's not a ton of growth in that area. Injuries are a big factor, obviously. But, you know, that's a big deal that he's not getting on the court as much as he needs to. If he can stay injury-free next year, that would be huge. But getting into actual stats is much more important. First of all, good steal rate, and Sumner's defense is a place that I will talk about with his skills, but pretty good steal rate, right? Like 0.5 steals in 14.4 minutes per game. If you do the per 36s there, that's 1.2 steals. That doesn't sound that high, but pretty good steals guy. Pretty good steal rate, right? Like amongst his peers and his lineups at about 2%. So that's something I always like from him is his energy and his length really translate to defense, and that's part of why I'm so high on him. He's 6'4", but has a longer wingspan, and he's really fast, so he can jump passing lanes. He can get his hands on the ball if someone's being loose with it, or if there's, you know, someone in triple threat not paying attention. Right, he's just capable of getting getting the ball, and separate from some other steel guys on the Pacers, he has the agility, the quickness, the wherewithal to lead the fast break and make something happen, right? If you'll recall his best game of the season against the Bulls, a ton of his damage, especially in the third quarter, came in transition where he could just take the ball, be a wrecking ball, start the offense, create some opportunities, usually for himself, but sometimes for teammates. And when I say sometimes for teammates, that transitions to another thing. His assist percentage jumped substantially, 6.3% in 2018-19, up to 16.7% his third year. I keep wanting to think it's his second year, but he did play that one game in his first year. Per 36 minutes, 4.4 assists. So still, you know, a decent chunk of ways to go as a passer, but he did show some flashes of being able to see the game. He kind of was a point guard in college. His basketball reference listed position was point guard his first 2 years in the league, right? He definitely has the ability to, you know, he's the Darren Collison passer, right? He'll know the read and he'll make it. He'll never do some advanced skip pass or really throw off the defense with some sort of passing mastery like Sabonis kind of can sometimes. But he definitely has the ability to, okay, this is what's supposed to be open. Oh, look, there it is. Boom. He can make that pass. That was a step forward for him this year. That was reflected in the stat sheet. But really, you got to hang it to the scoring at some point. The three-pointer never came around, and I think that is a crucially bad stat, 26.4%, because he's made threes in the G League at a pretty high clip. And, you know, whenever I talk to him about the G League in the locker room or wherever I run into him, he always says the three-pointer is being worked on in the G League. It's coming around. I think he's better than a 26% three-point shooter. It hasn't happened in the NBA yet, so I'm just stupid. But he's only taken 80 attempts, right? 21 for 80, not reflective of the shooter he is at all. You know, if of the next 20 instead of 26%, if of that next 20 he makes 8 of them, for example, that's close to a 30%. All of a sudden, you've got 30 out of 90. So his percentage is just so low that it doesn't really matter. But his shooting from other areas really kind of improved this year, which was a big part of his jump to me. At the rim, 72.5%, that athleticism just shined from 0 to 3 feet. He can dunk. He can do acrobatic finishes. And that's where a lot of his shots come. And I think that's what is something important about his shot profile is over a third of his shots come at the rim. Barely takes anything from mid-range, right? From 10 feet to the three-point line, 0.063% of his shots, or excuse me, 6.3% of his shots come from that distance. That's a great percentage, and he's taking the right shots, over a third of his shots from three as well. So he's a three-and-rim guy, and if the three comes around, that will lead to efficiency because despite his porous three-point shooting, his effective field goal percentage, really not terrible because he's able to finish at the rim so well. It's not good either, but it's not terrible, and you know, we've seen the handle, we've seen the athleticism, we've seen the defense, and there's the stats on all of them. For example, his defensive box plus minus is a positive at 0.2, which for a young guard is pretty rare in the NBA. So there's stats that back up all the things and the preconceived notions you have about Sumner. If the three comes, he'll just be so dangerous, right? He's already such a unique skilled guy, especially for the size he has. If he can get in a rotation and find a way to get more threes and knock him down, all of a sudden, he's a complete package, and that's a skill that he'll have to learn. And speaking of skills, I want to get into more specific little granular level stuff from him that we saw this year, so let's take a break and then do that. We are back, and thank you all for, if you're listening on the weekend, please leave us nice reviews on wherever you listen to podcasts and ratings, and say things about us in the comments, even if they're negative. I want to hear what you guys like about the show. Anywho, Sumner's skill set, so fascinating, so interesting. I harp on this every time this whole show, every time I've talked about him, just because there's not a lot of guys like him in the league who, you know, I talked about how he has the point guard kind of, like, limited point guard passing, but still point guard skills, but he's 6'4". That's pretty tall, right? Like, one of Brogdon's big advantages is his height. That they threw him at the one. He's 6'4", 6'5", himself. He's used his body to become a good finisher. Sumner has way more athleticism and speed than Brogdon, and I think he shows that almost every time he plays. I'm going back to that Bulls game again. If you don't remember that game very well, TJ Warren was out, Jeremy Lamb was out, Doug McDermott was out. They were missing so many guys in the wing that Sumner played big minutes, and I just remember his takeover in the third quarter of that game so vividly because it was far and away his best game of the season. For some statistics, he played 24 minutes and had 12 points, 5 assists that game. But anywho, you know, that kind of game showed me that he can be in control with the ball. He took 11 shots without going out of his way to shoot, things like that, you know, stuff that Sumner just, in time, I think, can do. And I think that that is, sorry, I that was detracting from my main point. You know, the point guard stuff, the passing, that kind of skill set, is that kind of ability to read the game is what makes me so confident that he is good and that he can be good in a rotation or at a higher level of minutes and responsibility than he currently has, right? I talk about this a lot, or I see this talked about a lot with draft prospects. If they're really good passers, and Zach Lowe brought this up, a phrase I'm about to use up on his draft show recently, really good passers have really good pattern recognition, right? They see what's happening on the court really well. They recognize the patterns of where guys are going to move or how the game flow is going to go, and they can create openings that way. Sometimes not that good of a passer, but he's got the reads down enough and the pattern recognition down enough that translates to defense for a lot of those point guards, right? Even if they understand offense really, but they're not a good defender yet, odds are if they have that pattern recognition, that will translate. Sumner has the pattern recognition and the athleticism to enough of an extent that that's why he's such a good defender. And that's why I believe in his game so much, is once the passing, and he's still limited, right? I'm not calling him like a good passer. A 1.8 assist per game is not, it's not much, but it's enough for me to believe that he is seeing the floor well when he's out there on both ends of the floor, and compare that with the things that he's already capable of doing in a way that can be a really special player at a lot of positions. And the point guard stuff, obviously awesome. You know, point guard being special, tall, is good. But, you know, if you all of a sudden, okay, let's throw this guy with Aaron Holiday. Aaron Holiday, you go initiate and be the shooter. Sumner, you be a defensive disruptor, lead stuff in transition, secondary creator kind of guy. I think he could do that pretty well. And if the three comes, see, this is the if. 6'4", you can get away with that for 5-10 minutes at the three. You don't want to, but you can in the way the NBA is going now. So if he can get the three ball just a little bit stronger, suddenly you've got a three-position guy who can really read the game. And that's really valuable. They have two more years on his deal, and I think they're going to try to grow him that way, because I think we've seen enough, or at least I have, of basically every other skill, right? He can drive past dudes. He can finish at the rim. He can make the reads. The easy reads. I mean, he's got to make more complicated reads at some point, but he can make the reads. He's not useless off ball. He can cut because he's fast. His defense is good. We've seen all that, not to elite levels, but to an extent that I go, okay, yeah, he can do that, except for shooting. That makes me go, why isn't he playing right now? You know, because he can do it all. And his G League stats are just ridiculous. I don't have those in front of me because I wanted to talk about his Pacers season. He finally got enough playing time to not warrant any G League discussion. All NBA level discussion, but he's got enough stuff going on that I think he's just got to start playing more, because again, he there's a clear role for this guy. When he's in the game, you can give him the ball every third possession, ask him to do something, you're not going to get killed. And of course, he's effective on D. He'll maybe not shut down another guard, but he can do a good enough job disrupting their life, making it hell. His literal first NBA start, I don't remember if it was a start or not. They played the Warriors right after Vic's injury in 2019. Klay Thompson had not a terrible game. Klay Thompson had a bad game with Sumner just going crazy and disrupting and playing a good game. And I never forget those kind of performances where guys who never really play show off their skills, because then they're called on to do a lot more. Or, you know, like Brian Bowen got a start against the Bulls this season. And, you know, he showed, okay, yeah, I can be just a useful part of the offense, right? He's not going to bog you down. He's not negative spacing, stuff like that. Sumner's the same way to me. Not to that low of an extent, right? He's better than that. He's more than that. He can do a lot more. But you know, he's shown enough skills that I go, okay, when he plays big minutes, I'm very confident he'll be good. And if the three comes, he'll be very good. And then he becomes starter quality to me. And I just think he's so skilled and so special and deserves more time. And I want to talk about his future with the Pacers and how he can get that playing time. So let's take one more break and do that. That was very rambly. That was not how I typically do the skills section. I kind of just wanted to talk about some how he's special and plays a lot of positions. But anywho, his future is pretty interesting. So they bypassed the chance to have him be a restricted free agent by giving him a three-year deal last summer. So he has two more years on his current deal at about $4.5 million, so they'll for sure have him for the next two seasons unless they trade him. And he doesn't make enough that, you know, there's going to be any fits or problems if he's not playing that often or anything like that. The trouble this coming season is, you know, with the Oladipo report today, and like I said right at the beginning, it sounds like Vic's going to be back. Brogdon's for sure back. He's a team leader, vocal leader, community leader. He'll be back. The reporting from J. Michael and, you know, just obvious thinking, you know, McConnell's going to be back. Aaron Holiday's team option's already picked up. He's young and good. He'll be back. Jeremy Lamb, supposedly, per KP's exit interview for the season, will be healthy by January, which is just a few weeks away. Or that was his timeline at that time. Who knows if what that truly means, right? And then there's Sumner. So that is five guards who are capable and going to play that are possibly in front of him in the rotation. Now, what I'm going to say is, I don't know that Jeremy Lamb is healthy or that when he comes back, he'll be better than Sumner. So there's a chance he's ahead of Jeremy Lamb. But then you also have like Justin Holiday occasionally plays the two when stuff gets shuffled and stuff like that. That makes it, you know, Sumner's path to minutes is pretty hard next year because for sure Brogdon and Depot are the starters. And what we saw in the bubble is a lot of TJ McConnell, Aaron Holiday link up combos with the second unit. I'm not sure, you know, if Lamb's back, they'll probably try to play Lamb. For his size, special skill set, or special is the wrong word, interesting skill set as well. If he's not capable, then that's different. But all of a sudden, you don't have a rotation spot for Sumner unless someone slides up a position, right? You put Lamb at the three. Like, say Justin Holiday's gone, then Lamb can play the three, McDermott's your bench four, and now you have an open spot at the two. There's still Aaron Holiday to take it, but then there's only one guy in front of Sumner. Or they trade someone. But this upcoming season, it's kind of hard at the beginning of the season to see what his role is going to be, which is kind of disappointing to me. I am hopeful that eventually there will be a spot in the rotation for him to play. You know, I'm not ever hoping for injury or something like that, but you know, just an opportunity for him to get out there and show that he's a really good fit. And Bjorkgren is, you know, a really unique guy to me, and his philosophies seem, looking at what he said in his history, like they're genuine. But if he really is leaning into this thing of, you know, he said in his presser, I don't have a set rotation I'm going to go with every game. You know, it's kind of going to be rigid, or I'm going to change it up. And that kind of happened with the Raptors, right? They had some games where they played guys a lot more or a lot less. And if guys been to that, great. And that's not entirely true, right? Like, it's not like he's going to just play Sabonis like 15 minutes if it's a bad matchup. He'll still do kind of normal stuff. But, you know, there's more sliders on him and variation and who's playing and who's not. I do wonder if he'll come in, and when he sees Sumner or when he evaluates the roster, he goes, I want to play this guy more. Maybe that is his path to playing time, is Bjorkgren coming in and saying, Edmund Sumner looks great, I want to play him over this guy or that guy. Or, oh, TJ McConnell's on the way out next year, okay, let's just run with Aaron and Sumner as our second unit guard. Whatever. There's a million scenarios but about what could happen. But I wonder if a new coach who is not, you know, embedded in a certain rotation or certain minutes distribution or style even, could say, okay, this guy can do a lot of stuff and is really tall for his position and unique and skilled. Let's get him out there. Let's get him some minutes. And I think that that is his most realistic path to minutes, is that Bjorkgren just shakes it up and says, let's get this dude playing time. And I hope that that happens, because I think he's he turns 25 at the end of this year, so his time is kind of running out. I mean, he'll make it through his contract. He's got a $60 million deal. Whatever, I'm sure he'll maybe get another deal after that. But I want him to get a chance before he's too old to really cash in on it, because I do think he's got a chance to be better than Jeremy Lamb. He's got a chance to even be better than Aaron Holiday. I think he might be better than Aaron Holiday right now, just bereft of the opportunity. That's probably not the right word. Just hasn't had the opportunity to do that. So I hope for his future that there is playing time on the horizon. I hope that the coaching staff or the front office can do what they did last year and say, okay, we think, yeah, you are the guard we want to play instead of to the two-point guards. And that was, you know, they only played McConnell or Aaron at the start of last year, and they played Sumner alongside them. So maybe that'll happen again, where they choose Aaron as the backup point guard and Sumner as the backup two if Lamb's out or something. I don't know. They clearly had faith in him at one point. Maybe they will again this year. I don't know. He's kind of the hardest guy to project, because he's played good in short minutes, but he's been hurt a lot, and they have a logjam of guards. Maybe his clearest path to playing time is they finally trade Depot, and he just steps right up. So we'll see what happens, but I'm excited to see where he can grow into. I think he's going to be a good player someday. But that is it. That is all for this show, and we finally have finished the player season recaps. That is every player. You can go back and listen to any of them, because obviously we've done every player. And come Monday, it is officially our full swing into offseason mode. I think trades will be able to be completed starting on Tuesday, Monday, whenever the 16th is. That is, in fact, Monday. So on Monday, draft is Wednesday. It's all going to be happening fast. So we'll cover it all here. Thank you guys for listening. Enjoy your weekend, and we will see you then.